Hello, and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solution Project in collaboration with Shoshin Works, a global firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy, and policy, and they're reframing how we build for resilient futures. Today, we are examining the ways that dynamic systems of information, incentive, and interaction are reshaping societal systems of governance and network orchestration. Traditional boundaries and operating norms are being updated, replaced with ecosystemic models, our new economic engines for the digital era. I am Marco Annunziata, co-founder of Annunziata & Desai Advisors. I'm an economics PhD and the former chief economist and head of business innovation strategy at General Electric. Prior to that, I worked in policy and then in finance. My expertise lies at the intersection of global economic and financial trends with technology and innovation. My guest today is Himanshu Bharadwaj. Himanshu is an innovative and experienced design expert based in the US and very well known for his transformative approach to design, strategy, leadership, and innovation. He's a digital nerd with the mind of a Himalayan yogi. He created Joyful Design, which you can find on the web at www.joyful.design, a philosophy that harmonizes business chaos with the serenity of human-centric thinking. Himanshu blends the art of design with the science of human behavior, crafting deeply resonant solutions for startups and large enterprises. His unique process integrates modern cognitive science with ancient wisdom, inspiring teams to turn stress into success, chaos into clarity, and even making Monday mornings something to look forward to. Whether in the boardroom or on the meditation cushion, Himanshu believes life should be joyful, meaningful, and a little bit magical. Himanshu earned a master's degree in graphic design at the National Institute of Design in India, and a Master of Design in Advertising Design at Syracuse University. Himanshu, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me, Marco. I look forward to our conversation.
So do I. So, Himanshu, you have a very interesting and very unusual history and perspective. And our discussion today will touch on advanced technology, but also on philosophy and on ancient wisdom, building on your personal experience in India. Let's begin with artificial intelligence. Since today there is enormous excitement about AI, some scientists argue we are even on the brink of developing an AI that can develop consciousness. What is your view?
So I think let's examine the word intelligence and see whether AI is really intelligent. So there is a word called information. So internet was all about information, collection of information. And then there is something called knowledge, which is basically being able to process and analyze the information. And then there is something called intelligence, which applies this knowledge, uses intuition, creativity, wisdom for meaningful purposes. Now, intelligence also understands the limits of intellect. So it is wise enough to understand that. And also it goes into fuzzy areas of exploration and creativity, takes chances, takes risks. So it goes into the innovation territory. So while I see the value of AI and how AI is evolving, as Noah Harari recently said, AI is more like an amoeba in the whole evolution process. So we should look forward to what's next in the evolution and where it transforms. That is one perspective. The other perspective I see about AI is that AI is more materialistic and consciousness is actually materialism evolved. Comes out of consciousness. That's one perspective.
That's an interesting one. What do you mean, Himanshu, when you say that you see AI as being materialistic?
So AI is using the information that is available in the materialistic world. It uses language to process that information and create these models of information for us to consume. Now, it does get into the territory of the mind. 400 years ago, when all the inventions started happening, there was an expansion in the materialistic world, and then also discoveries used to happen. Various continents were discovered. So now I see a different kind of revolution happening, which is basically once the outside world is mapped, there is an effort to map the inside of the mind. So AI is an attempt to map the inside of the mind. It tries to understand how human beings think, how we behave, and then it tries to respond using those models into an AI technology. However, what I also see, AI, the way brain works is the neurons, or how the creativity works. Neurons are basically cross-connecting between completely different ideas. However, AI is still not able to do those kind of cross-connections to create creativity. The other aspect of AI that I feel is still missing is being aware, having a sense of subjective awareness, having a sense of I. So the ego or the I. So the I in the AI is still missing, in my opinion.
That is a good way of putting it.
But there is a lot of possibility. And what I see about AI is it could be a parallel evolution, just like how our minds have evolved, an evolution of information that connects different nodes across the world and understands human behavior and helps human beings evolve their own consciousness, evolves themselves, because the purpose of human life is to evolve. And if technology can help us evolve, nothing like it.
Exactly. So what I hear you say, which is very interesting, is that there are still at this stage, at least, very clear differences between AI and humans and human intelligence. Something that we should keep in mind in how we use AI. So my takeaway from your view is that we should be careful at this stage to look at AI as a powerful tool that can help us, but understanding its limitations. The other thing I find interesting in what you mentioned, you have already mentioned several times the concept of creativity. And I know that creativity is very central to your idea of design thinking. So do you want to tell us a bit more how you see the importance of creativity and what do you think are the drivers of creativity?
So I think creativity has some primary drivers that could be empathy, limitation, courage to explore uncharted territory, and also being able to make cross connections across ideas and cultures. So basically being able to take that risk is not available probably right now in AI, but these are all also human qualities that define us as human beings. We live on the logical and the abstraction. We have this duality in our nature. There is sorrow as well as happiness. There is the outer world, which is the materialistic world, and we have our own consciousness inside us. So there is abstraction and tangible thing in the world. So between tangible, intangible, we live. There is life and there is death. There is sleep and there is waking state. So we live on those dualities. On the other hand, AI is basically a information processing and mapping and probably predicting a little bit of prediction also right now. But it's primarily information processing and it works on language models. Mm-hmm. However, human beings don't necessarily work on language models. We do think in language. When I'm talking to you, I'm actually thinking in my own language, which is fine, but we also think beyond languages. For example, if I am listening to a nice flute music, mm-hmm. I'm enjoying the music. There is no language involved. If I am in grief, I may not be experiencing grief or love in a language. Mm-hmm. So there is experience beyond the language. And that experience is inherently very human. And that defines us as human beings.
I think it's a very deep concept. So I would like to just underscore it, because what you're saying is that our experience goes beyond language processing. Our experience in terms of consciousness, awareness, emotions is also an integral part of what makes us intelligent and creative and innovative in a human sense. And it's something that by design, today at least, artificial intelligence does not have. In fact, let me also take a step back, because I had warned our audience at the beginning that the conversation would be partly philosophical, and we've talked already about consciousness, about awareness. So maybe it's worth giving the audience a little bit of background about yourself. Before moving into design thinking, you actually trained to be a yogi. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was born in a family of yogis, and I have extensively traveled in the north part of India and the Himalayan region, have met many yogis in my life, and I feel very blessed, and something that I cherish every day of my life, all the experiences that I've had growing up in India.
I visited the Himalayas myself, and those are places that are full of a level of spirituality that is difficult to convey if one hasn't experienced it. But and again, let me stress, what we're doing here is, and what you do in your work is not be philosophical for the sake of it, but it's really understanding how a different attitude from the normal cold rationality we're used to can actually improve, help us be better humans and better scientists and better leaders. So you've developed, based on your experience, you've developed this concept of joyful thinking. Why don't you tell us a bit about it, what it is, why is it important, how does it work?
Sure. So let me first touch upon the aspect of philosophy, because I feel philosophy is so important for every scientific person. In fact, philosophy is what science has not yet been able to prove yet. Mm-hmm. So,
I would argue, sorry, Himanshu, I would argue philosophy, because I started early in my youth studying ancient philosophy the ancient Greeks, and then broadening beyond them. And philosophy was science. It was the earliest science. It was first attempt to make sense of the world.
That is true. Yeah. I think it was the Newtonian science that bifurcated philosophy and physical sciences, or natural sciences as they called. And there is actually a book on Galileo's error, which goes deep into the subjectivity in science that is missing right now. Mm-hmm. And everything has been so quantitative. And this is a problem in business also. And as a designer, I feel philosophy helps me imagine things better, and being able to do both subjective and objective analysis of every problem. But coming to your question about joyful design, I think the genesis of joyful design came through my experience in the corporate world, where I saw a lot of people burnt out. Every day I would read newspaper and I see violence everywhere. And the data is appalling. I think one out of four people in the world or in the US take antidepressant right now. After COVID, the percentage of divorce has increased in the world. People are feeling lonely. And as a designer, I was looking at dating apps where people were looking for partners. But when two lonely people meet, they will only share loneliness, and it will not lead to happiness. Mm-hmm. And human beings are made to create connection and find meaning and purpose in life and to evolve. So when I was designing different applications, I was not finding that joy, even in the corporate style of working. Unless we reach a state of mind where we are joyful, and it is hard to come up with really creative path-breaking ideas. Because if we are under a lot of stress, we would only spread out stress in the team, and the work that we would create also would not be joyful to the other person receiving that work, whether it's any kind of art, music, science, any kind of discovery it is. So ideas born out of inner joy will resonate deeply with everybody because we are all born from joy. And joy is the common thread between all of us. And it actually relates to consciousness because one of the definition of consciousness is it is there, it exists. There is no beginning or the end. It is always there. It is truth. It is always all-pervading. And it is blissful. So the reason why this definition comes, and as I think about it more, is because once we start thinking beyond our bodies and mind, which really defines us, our identity comes from our body. More or less, everything comes when we define ourselves, we define our body. And sometimes we define ourselves based on our ideology, which is basically a mental identity. But that is in the waking state. And if you really go deep into who we really are, we in our, are we the one in the waking state? But when we sleep, we are in a dream state. Now, our body is at rest. So our identity is whatever we are thinking in the mind. And then when we go into deep sleep, there is no body and mind. And there is only happiness, bliss. We feel so relaxed when we wake up from a very deep sleep. So that is the identity where there is no body and mind, but we are in deep sleep state. So, and that is an existential question. Who are we? Are we this body? Are we this mind? Or something apart from that? And consciousness is being aware of the awareness of what we are doing. I'm talking to you, so I'm being aware of the fact that I'm talking to you. But there is something beyond that is aware that I'm aware of talking to you. So that is really the consciousness, and it is a blissful state beyond body and mind. And so I worked in advertising, I worked in product, creating products, and more or less all communication and product design is focused on external gratification. And the external world is incomplete. The human body is also incomplete. Nobody can say, my body is perfect. There is always something or the other wrong. No business is ever complete. No business will ever say, I've made enough money, I'm done. I will not earn any more money. No product will ever say, we have built all the features. There is no more new feature to be built. So there is incompleteness in the outside world. And that incompleteness in the outside world makes us keep chasing the outside world to find completeness. Now, when you turn a little bit inwards, you start looking at our inside and you find more solace, peace, contentment, and completeness within. So not many people do that. In fact, I have a joke with my friends who ask me, what is the relevance of this kind of thinking? So I ask them their age. Somebody says he's 40. I said, I would tell them, in your 40 years of life, have you ever thought about for 40 seconds who you really are? So that is where we are. We are so much outside that we really hardly think about the inside. And it is good that AI is trying to get into the mind of human beings. So now joyful design came out of that scenario and the thought process. So I created an operating system for designers, for innovators, for anybody in any profession, whether it's scientists or politicians, leaders, how to operate in this world and be successful in the outside world at the same time, find inner joy and peace so that you become peaceful and happy at the same time people around you will become peaceful and happy. And there is more meaning and purpose in everything that you do. So leaders will become less. Innovators will become better innovators. And it would actually do good to the world because you're no longer thinking about yourself. You're actually thinking about the humanity. Because once you separate the body and mind out of it, what is left is consciousness. And then everybody has the same consciousness, which means we are all connected with each other. So once you start having that connection, all the divisions of religion, color, geographies, ideologies will disappear. And we reach the definition of who we are as a true human being, and the humanity will come out of that. And once you create anything out of humanity, it will only create joy in the world. So that is what I've come up with.
Thank you very much. I'm eager to interrupt you because I wanted to point out something which strikes me as very important, because the point you're making is very powerful to me in the following sense. When you were pointing out earlier that in the world, everything by definition is incomplete, and therefore we always want more. I'm an economist, and I recognize that as the engine that keeps the global economy going. It's the fact that we are never satisfied. We always want a new product. We want the newer version of the iPhone, even if it's marginally improved from the previous one. We always want more and more. And you are saying if we look inward, it's going to be much easier for us to feel more complete, more satisfied. And a simplistic reaction to this might be that this is a call to almost slowing down economic progress, given that economic progress is driven by a sense of dissatisfaction. But you're making a different point. You're making the point that once we embrace better awareness of who we are and a better and more joyful attitude, it's not that we will stop striving for better. It's that we will keep wanting to do better and to make better things, but with a broader and somehow more enlightened perspective rather than the mechanistic sort of treadmill we're on right now.
That is correct. That is correct. And let me elaborate on that point. The idea that is, we because of the mechanistic way of functioning, the Industrial Revolution, and also how computers, internet has evolved, and now AI has evolved, there is a real risk that human beings will become like robots. We'll just be more mechanized. And we will, and there is already conversations about how we are losing our own human emotions. We are playing video games that are violent and killing each other in the video games without having any humanity, what exactly we are doing. And that same thing is being replicated in the outside world where children are killing in schools. And violence is happening everywhere. So true joy, it doesn't mean slowing down in the outside world. It actually would increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our own self, because our mind is so distracted all the time that even if we are working for 8 hours in an office, effectively we are probably working for 4 or 3 hours. So because we are not focused, we're constantly distracted, constantly in the chatter of the mind. And when we have a meaning and purpose, we are not just chasing quarterly reports, quarterly targets, annual like bonuses, but we are enjoying every moment of the work. And it helps leaders become better leaders, because they would not put a carrot and stick in front of their team members, but they would actually create some purpose in everything they are doing. There is some higher purpose. You are not working for a salary, or you're not working to wait for the Friday weekend to happen. And every day becomes a chore to come to the office, but you come every day to the office to do something very meaningful in your life that makes you a better human being. So their motivation will increase, and motivation is an inherent human quality. And unless we are motivated from within, nobody will be able to work. So that is a soft skill. What happens is a lot of jobs hire people based on the hard skill. They evaluate based on the hard skill. Hard skills can be learned. AI will do all these hard skills anyway. So what will human beings do? And human beings can do things that make them very human. There is also another joke that I was talking to you last week when we had chatted, that if AI does all the work, what will human beings do? Will there be a universal wage everywhere? So since you are an economist, that is another conversation to be had, whether we should have a universal wage. But the opportunity for us when AI can do a lot of work that typically human hands do and human machines do, or a human body does is to use our mind more effectively. And there are several faculties in the mind that science has not been able to scratch the surface yet. Mind is still an abstract entity. We have been researching the mind based on observing behavior, but there is much deeper aspect to the mind. And coming from the Indian wisdom background, how we define mind is basically several layers that create the mind. One is the vacillating mind, which is constantly thinking and unable and thinking in multiple directions, not able to decide, the multi-directional kind of mind. Then there is intellect, which is basically a decision-making tool. It's like a sharp knife. It decides what to do. And then there is memory, different kinds of memories that happen. And memories are also of several kinds. And these memories come from our actions that we do. And then the last kind of mind is the ego mind, which actually defines the identity of who we are. So now applying this into design changes the way we look at design. Applying into products, marketing, sales changes the whole perspective. For example, I'll just tell you how mind science is so important in design. We create experiences in products. Everything is an experience. Even a filmmaker is basically creating an experience. Yeah. A scientist discovering anything is creating an experience for where that scientific discovery would be applied to. So any experience is a combination of cognition and sensory experience, sensory stimulation. So sensation and cognition creates an experience. And we haven't really understood how to understand all the senses and also how do we cognize. And that's neuroscience of cognition, the mind sciences. All that is still at a very early stage of our evolution. But the Eastern wisdom has been delving into this topic for thousands of years. So the mind sciences has evolved and been experimented for thousands of years. So I could draw that wisdom and apply into my own profession to my advantage.
No, that it's so profound and so important. And many of us tend to miss this. My personal story is that I was born in Europe, in Italy. So I grew up with a classic Western frame of mind. But then I've been married for nearly 30 years to an Indian, to a woman who grew up in India. And so I've had a chance to get steeped into the Indian philosophies. And I would like to point out something to our audience, which is interesting. Moving it already, or to make an example from the philosophical to the very practical, the same millennia-long tradition that has created wisdom and understanding of the mind and consciousness in India has also created Ayurvedic medicine. Now, recently, in recent years, my wife was pointing out, she was very irritated, cases of Western pharmaceutical companies that were trying to patent Ayurvedic remedies that have been prevalent in India for thousands of years, but they're only now being discovered and recognized as valid. And so there was this rush to try to patent them. And I think it's similar for what you're pointing out, the science of the mind, because again, from my Western perspective, I was initially very skeptical of the very concept of meditation, until I realized that the mind is in some way a muscle like any others. Like I train my body, exercising my mind, being able to focus it is actually a very powerful tool. So what you're saying, which is the value of tapping this very ancient wisdom that has the power of experience. Right? This is something that has been experimented and honed on tens of millions of people over thousands of years. It's actually has a track record.
Yes, it is said, I know that the Eastern philosophy of knowledge is that if you protect the knowledge from people, it's not going to grow the knowledge. The knowledge will not evolve. So the more you share, the knowledge will evolve. And that is how traditions evolve, knowledge systems evolve, and it becomes more rooted in human self and evolution. So human beings evolve with knowledge, and that happens through sharing. So we add tradition, oral tradition and written tradition of knowledge. People would memorize books, so books will never be lost. And I think there was a decline, but the core of that knowledge does not exist in any book. It exists in consciousness. So if you can reach that consciousness, which is all-pervading, which is cosmic consciousness, through meditation, then no knowledge is not non-accessible. So every knowledge is accessible. That is the concept of meditation. And the best knowledge is your own inner knowledge, this knowledge of yourself, which is called the highest knowledge. Because the goal of human life is to understand who we are. And everybody is trying their best to understand who we are. And life is more like snakes and ladders. We are just going one step in from another, and then there is a layoff, or there is a death in the family, or something or the other, we come down from it. There is actually another interesting analogy I'll give you. Growing up in India, there was this festival where they would erect a long pole on that day of the festival. And on top of the pole, there were these gifts. So whoever climbs the pole will get the gift. Now, the owner of that pole would put a lot of yogurt, oil, and all those things on the pole. So nobody was able to climb. And when they were trying to climb, they would pour more oil to it. So they would slip down from it. So life is also like that. You keep climbing two steps and then you slip down and then finally go all the way up and you understand who you are. You get the gift. So it's a journey. Life is a journey to attain that gift of understanding who you are.
You mentioned there is still a very wide gap between the wisdom of ancient cultures like the Indian culture and the practices of the Western economic world. But you are operating exactly in an area that tries to bridge that gap. What are some success stories that you can highlight where you've seen in the business world, some of these approaches leading to better leadership, better products?
Sure. So I think let's define what a human being is. Human being is, in my opinion, a bridge between the outside and the inside. And if you are only in the outside, then you are disconnected with the inside. And most decisions, most insights, most innovation happen through the inside. And it is our unconscious mind that drives most of our behavior. So that unconscious mind needs to be understood and polished, cleaned up and defined. So if you can clean up your unconscious mind, your interactions in the outside world will change automatically. That's the formula for how one can implement joyful design philosophy and how this whole concept can be applied to the corporate world or the world that is always in a hurry. Let's take an example of leadership. If somebody is an empathetic leader, creates safe space for people, they would definitely be able to retain more people or retain the employees. Now, all this is written in books. In a lot of management and leadership books talk about being open-minded, being flexible, but nobody actually talks about how to be flexible, how to be open-minded. So what I do in my work is I create these workshops. And through these workshops, we can change brain physiology of people through constant questioning, reflection, self-reflection. You can actually change your brain physiology. You can change how you think, how your perception changes. And once your perception changes, you look at everything in the world very differently. You can become better leaders, you can become better scientists and better creators. You no longer see other people as adversaries, but as collaborators, because you start seeing similarities between you and the other person. You won't see them as threats, because human brain has evolved over millions of years, and we are still seeing everything as a threat, because the threat perception is so strong, because we were hunter-gatherers, mm-hmm. and we scan the world for threats whenever we look at the world. So in order for us to go from the primal circuits to the higher realms or the frontal cortex, we need a certain kind of physiology change in the brain. So that is what I've learned with my friends and people I've interacted with over the years. And I try to implement it in my work. Now, if you are designing, if you're brainstorming, there are different exercises that I typically do for divergent thinking, how we can be more creative. And design thinking was a good model, but it has failed because it was not defining how to do certain changes of behavior, changes in behavior needed to do, say, for example, divergent thinking. So I have gone really deep into those kind of aspects, how to create using change in behavior, perception, and the brain physiology.
In fact, let me bring this back to science, because you mentioned earlier something about the limitation of the modern approach to science, which is entirely empirical and lacking often in subjectivity. What do you see as the limitation, and what is a better way to broaden our approach to science?
So science right now lacks subjectivity. That is one aspect I've found. And
we should clarify what you mean, because I think the average scientist would immediately tell you, but that's exactly the point of science. Science is meant to be objective. It doesn't have room for subjectivity.
So whatever we are creating is for human consumption or human growth or for the planet where human beings live. And human beings are defined by emotions. Human beings are defined by different characteristic traits. Human mind is an instrument that creates these inventions. So without understanding human beings, we would then create scientific inventions that would be harmful for human beings. We may be creating virus that would be harmful for human beings. We'll be creating weapon systems.
Arguably, we've already done that.
yes. We'll be creating bombs that would harm human beings. But once you see, so instead of harming the enemy, what if we were trying to change the mindset of the enemy and bring them? So it's basically transformation. So using intelligence for transformation is a better way to use science. So like AI is a tool to actually transform people. So we should use it to transform people's. And since it can deal directly with the mind, we can see, we have already seen how social media plays with the minds of people, mm-hmm. and how AI has been implemented in social media to make those wider changes. What if we apply AI to change the minds and hearts of people, and we can actually create a better planet, better ecosystems within the planet?
That is a troubling thought, given what the governance of AI seems to be like. So I see the power of the idea. Instinctively, it makes me uneasy. But I see your point. It is by my view, my reaction is colored by the fact that so far, the way in which we have applied these technologies, including social media and AI, has been driven by an attitude which never stops to consider the implications for humanity. And what you're saying is, once we take those implications into account and actually we allow them to drive our entire agenda, then we can use these tools to better effect.
And also, let me also add, there is so much for science to discover. We have only discovered only part of what exists. There is an entire space out there to be discovered. We have, and also, even within an atom, we have not fully understood the atom. There is much more in the atom to be discovered. There is much more in the whole cosmos to be discovered. And then there is a lot more in the inner space to be discovered. We have not even discovered our own inner space. So science has so many possibilities for discovery. Why are we stopping and focusing only on destruction? Because if we destruct ourselves, if we self-destruct ourselves, how can we go to Mars? How can we actually realize our own self? So we are actually killing all the possibilities of science that exist today. So creativity is so much important, and joyful creativity will help shape the world. And it is not that difficult. If you change one person, that one person will change the other person. And that transformation can happen through intelligence.
And indeed, maybe it is happening already, because you and I started by reflecting on how philosophy was the beginning of science, was our initial effort to make sense of the world. And now philosophy is seen as something which is separate from science. However, our scientific research, especially with things like areas like quantum physics, has gotten to the stage where our understanding of the world around us starts to blend into philosophy, with the idea or scientific evidence that things can be in two different states at the same time. They can exist in two different universes at the same time. So maybe we're coming full circle, and science is reemerging with philosophy again.
That is true. The double slit experiment and the Nobel Prize in quantum physics, I think all those, and even the Schrodinger's book.
Exactly. And recently we released an episode of our podcast, which I found fascinating, where we spoke to a U.S. Navy pilot who encountered what are now called unexplained anomalous phenomena, the old UFOs, and with top scientists who are studying the phenomenon. What I found fascinating is the change in attitude. So 20 years ago, the attitude was, well, we've seen something that it can't be, it's impossible, so we dismiss it. And now the attitude to the same phenomena is, we can't explain it, but we recognize it is possible, it's consistent with the laws of physics, and so let's try to think more creatively about how could it be done, how could we do it, how could we get there.
Yeah, yeah, and at the end of the day, we are all vibrations. So, right. So, if we can improve our vibes, I think we can change the world.
I think that is an excellent message, an excellent note on which to end our conversation in our podcast. Himanshu Bharadwaj, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a fantastic conversation on philosophy, science, and how creativity and joyful thinking can help us design better products, have a better economy, and a better world. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks everyone for joining us today. Please do check out this season's new episodes as we explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and refactor business models, and how this convergence is reshaping industry and what it means for our ecosystemic futures. Follow us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite place for podcasts is. And you can always learn more or apply to be a guest speaker at shoshinworks.com.